It doesn't do to mangle a summoning. If you get the words wrong, it can have all kinds of bad effects. Best case scenario, the summoning doesn't work, and you pour all the effort into it for nothing. One step worse, a bungled summoning could call up the wrong being, maybe one that would be happy to rip off your face with its tentacle-laden, extendable maw. Finally, at the extreme end of negative consequences, the failed summons might call up the being you wanted, in this case the Earl King, only it would be insulted that you hadn't bothered to get it right. Uber-powerful beings of the spirit world had the kind of power and tempers that horror movies are made of, and it was a bad idea to get one of them mad at you. If you called up a being incorrectly, there was very little you could do to protect yourself from them. That was the job hazard of summoning. If I chanted the Earl King to Chicago, I had to be damn sure I did it correctly, or it would be worth as much as my life. Once more, I told Sheila quietly when she was finished. I had to be sure. She nodded and began again. I checked my written version. They all came out the same for the third time in a row, so I was as sure as I reasonably could be that it was accurate. I stared at the notepad for a moment, trying to absorb the summoning, to remember its rhythm, the rolling sound of consonant and verb that were only incidentally related to language. This wasn't a poem. It was simply a frequency, a signal of sound and timing, and I committed it with methodical precision to memory, the same way I stored the precise inflections required to call upon a spirit being using its true name. In a sense, the poem was a name for the Earl King. He would respond to it in the same way. When I looked up again a few moments later, I felt the gentle pressure of Sheila's gaze. She was watching me, her eyes worried. "You're either incredibly stupid or one of the most courageous men I've ever seen." "Go with stupid," I said lightly. "In my experience, you can't go wrong assuming stupid."
"If you use the summoning," she said quietly, not smiling at my tone, "and something bad happens to you, I will be to blame."
I shook my head. "No," I said. "I know what I'm doing. It will be my own damn fault."
"I'm not sure that your acceptance can absolve me of responsibility," she said, frowning. "Is there anything else I can do to help you?"
"There's no need to offer," I said.
"Yes," she said earnestly, "there is. I need to know that I've done whatever I can. That if something happens to you, it won't be because of something I didn't do."
I studied her face for a moment and found myself smiling.
"You take this whole responsibility thing very seriously," I said. "Is there some reason I shouldn't?" she asked.
"Not at all," I said.
"It's just unusual from someone... well, don't take this the wrong way, but it's unusual from someone so far down the ladder when it comes to raw power."
She smiled a little.
"It doesn't take much power to hurt someone," she said. "It's far easier than healing the damage. It's always like that, for everything, not just magic."
"Yeah, but not many people seem to get that." I reached over and put my right hand on hers. She had very soft, very warm hands. "Thank you for helping me. If there's anything I can ever do to pay you back..." She smiled at me and said,
"There is one thing."
"Oh?" I asked. She nodded.
"A friend told me once that you can tell a lot about a person from how they do things the first time."
I blinked a couple of times and then said, like what?"
"Like this," she said, and came to me. She moved beautifully, fluid and graceful and elegantly feminine. She was all warm curves and soft flesh, scented of wildflowers, as she slid one leg over mine, straddling my thighs. Her gentle hands lightly framed my face as she leaned down to kiss me, her eyes rolling back and closing in anticipation as her mouth met mine. The kiss began slowly, quietly, sensuous but not impassioned, patience without hesitance. Her lips were a warm and gentle contact on mine, and there was a sense of exploration to her mouth as she felt her way around the kiss. Maybe I was just too tired or too injured or too worried about my prospects for immediate survival, but it felt good. It felt really good.
Sheila's mouth wasn't inflamed with need. She demanded nothing with the kiss. All she wanted was to taste my mouth, to feel my skin under her hands. And then, without warning, a desperate yearning for more of that simple contact, that human warmth, roared through me in a flash fire of need. Nearly everyone underestimates how powerful the touch of another person's hand can be. The need to be touched is something so primal, so fundamentally a part of our existence as human beings, that its true impact upon us can be difficult to put into words. That power doesn't necessarily have anything to do with sex, either. From the time we are infants, we learn to associate the touch of a human hand with safety, with comfort, with love. I hadn't been touched much for, well, a long damn time.